The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where this week, like every week of every month of every year for more years than I can even count, we have been bringing you the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. So it's Fund Drive week, but you guys don't have to listen to Fund Drive because you did such a great job at the last Fund Drive.
Thank you to everybody who called during that. Yes.
Yes, pledging for, gosh, I don't remember what we did, a Subject 2 course, I think, a Creative Finance Summit, something.
Incredibly popular.
It was, and we'll do that again come September-ish, and at that point, what we will be offering is tickets to the National Real Estate Investing Summit, which is coming up here in Cincinnati on October 31st and November 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. It never rolls off the tongue when it flops over between 2 months. But it's Halloween through November 3rd. And listeners who you're like, I already know I'm going. I'm just waiting for the pledge drive. We'll probably actually have that up early this year so that you can go ahead and make your travel plans and for God's sakes get a room at the hotel if you want to stay at the event hotel. Well, last year we ran out of rooms in early August, and then we had the fund drive in September, and then people were calling the office going, there's no rooms at the hotel. Yeah, I know, because like 1,000 people show up to that. That's why. So anyway, put it on your calendar, October 31st, November 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. And one of the cool things about that event is, we got all the big national gurus that you see. Oh, let me say, we have all the good big national gurus that you see on the internet and whatnot. And you get to meet them live and in person and hear them talk and look them in the face and all that sort of stuff. But we also have a whole lot of speakers who just really got very good at what they do. They don't do mentoring. They don't have courses. They just, you know, they come and they tell you what they know, and it's very neat. So one of those people this year is Mr. Ed Benz, who is my guest today on Real Life Real Estate Investing. Ed is a, let's just say, very seasoned investor. If he decides to say how many years he's been in it, we'll let him do that. But I'm always sensitive about, people saying, I've been doing this for 3 decades, because then, you know, folks do the math. And they go, she's not 39. He's in the Pittsburgh area. He's the past president of Acre of Pittsburgh, as well as their last executive director up there. And he's joining us by phone from his home in Pennsylvania. Ed, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Hi, Vina. How you doing? Can you hear me all right?
Yes. We can hear you.
I'm
going
to correct the record, first of all. I am not the past president. I'm the current president of our local
Real Estate. Took that mantle up again, huh?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I did, and I'm having fun at it. So,
yeah. Being the president of AREA is sometimes the job you cannot retire from.
Oh, no.
I mean,
they
tried. You tried. You were like, no, I'm not going to be president. I'm going to be executive director.
Yeah, they didn't let me. So yeah. Here I am.
Yeah, well, I mean, congratulations, ?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're joking around, folks, because presidents of RIAs is not really a paid job. It's a job, though. It's you just, like, don't get paid for that job. But it can be very rewarding if you love what you're doing and love building a community of real estate entrepreneurs. So, yeah. All right. So other than my huge bobble there in the introduction, Ed, tell folks, like, again, you've been doing this a long time. You've been doing it through quite a few markets. Like, you've seen the downside and the upside and the sideways version of it. Tell us how you got into real estate, what you've done during that time, and what you're doing now.
Well, I'm not afraid to tell you how old I am, and I actually got involved in real estate in 1983, sitting on a couch watching Carl Sheets at 3 o'clock in the morning, right after I graduated high school. I bought my first property. Excuse me. I bought my first property in 1999. It shows a little bit of fear there and moving forward, but ever since then, I've been bought my first property, did a flip, and then decided that I didn't need a second job. I already had one of them. So I decided to switch up and just started buying rentals at that point and continued to do so up till 2013, where I ended up enabling myself to go full time doing this. And now I'm the manager of 70 single family homes, mm-hmm. which comprises the majority of my portfolio. And like we talked about before, I'm also the president of our local RIA because I like to pay forward for all the blessings I've been given.
Mm-hmm. And it's a good thing you own all those rentals so that you can afford to volunteer to be president of a nonprofit group.
Yeah, I just replaced one job with another. Go figure. I ended up doing exactly what I said I didn't want to do.
Well, I mean, we're laughing about it, but I mean, that's really real. One of the, you know, when people view themselves as I'm going to become financially independent so that I can have an airplane and a yacht and, I don't know, spend my summers in wherever one spends one summer, so when one is super rich like that, Saint-Tropez. I'm going to spend my summers in Saint-Tropez. But the reality is one of the awesome things about having properties that are supporting you, right? Like I don't really have to work other than to make sure that my tenants are happy and my properties are being taken care of and all that sort of stuff, is that you can do anything you want with that time. You can go volunteer to run a RIA. You can go volunteer for your church. You can, you know, go on mission trips. You can sit around topless in Saint-Tropez. Like, you can do whatever you want. It is just not the case that all real estate investors kind of have the same, they all have the same end goal, which is financial independence, but what they're going to do with that freedom of time, freedom of money is very different.
That's the truth. And I find my favorite topic to talk about is real estate. So go figure, I'm in the right place for it.
I think when you can't stop, it's called addiction. I could be.
Oh, it's better than some of the other addiction choices then.
So we sort of, I mean, of all the different things we could have talked about, given your long experience in real estate investing, we sort of decided to revisit the topic of BRRRR, but buy, rehab, rent, refinance, repeat. This is a topic that you addressed here 2 or 3 years ago, back when things were different, back when the market was different than it is today. And everything that I've seen, like all the BRRRR people went weirdly silent since then. You know, I mean, there were books, there were courses, everybody was talking about it on social media. It was all, you know, you should do BRRRR, BRRRR's the best, BRRRR rocks, it's so easy. There's this, you know, very simple system, very simple numbers and processes. And either we hear nothing at all, or I occasionally hear somebody pop up and declare it dead. So what happened?
What happened? So let's see. First of all, BRRRR is nothing more than a catchphrase for what I've been doing for well over 20 years. And unfortunately, the way that they couched it, it was actually an invitation to invite people who aren't experienced in real estate to make a really big mistake if they're not careful. And that mistake was to ignore the numbers behind the rental property they were buying. They talk about buy, rehab, rent, refinance, and repeat. I'm telling you that process is actually backwards. As far as I'm concerned, you should be buying with the right finance in place first. then rehab, rent, and repeat. And then you can tack the refinance on the end only if it makes sense. The problem with it was is you're inviting people to go out and buy a property, and it didn't matter what the financing was. And then you just go out, you do all this work to it, you get it up and running, and then you rent it out, and all of a sudden now you have a certain amount of income coming in, and you hope that you can refinance it so that it provides you with some cash flow at the end. I mean, I prefer to know what my cash flow is going to be before I ever buy the property so that I don't buy it wrong. Because as far as I'm concerned, if you have a property where you're paying more money out every month than you're bringing in, you don't have an investment, you actually have a liability, and it won't be long till you're selling that liability, and sometimes at a loss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a lot of hype around the idea of BRRRR, and again, with hype comes, here, buy my book, here, buy my course, here, come to my weekend, all that sort of stuff. And those of us who've been around for a while, as soon as we heard about it, we were like, did that guy just declare that he invented that? that's been the strategy forever. And then as we look more closely at it, it was so closely associated with the idea of the 1% rule. The idea that as long as you bought a property for basically 100 times the gross rent, you know, so if it rented for $1,600 a month, you should go out and pay $160,000 for it. And then everything would be fine. Like, that was the number. That was the only number, you know, was the 1% rule. That was really an artifact of a time when interest rates were 2 and 3%.
And that's correct. And that's when BRRRR was flourishing the most, is because if you could get a 2 or 3% loan, then you ended up cash flowing no problem because the mortgage payments were so low. But all you had to do was just all of a sudden be in the middle of converting a property when the Fed decided to raise the interest rates. What was, I forget the actual numbers, but they raised it a number of times very quickly, and we went from 2% up to 5, 6, and I'm seeing 7% on some of the loans now. So all of a sudden your payment has just skyrocketed up, and any hard and fast rule doesn't apply because you're not taking into account all the different variables that affect how much, it basically affects your cash flow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have wondered what has happened to the folks who were, you know, because it was a strategy that you could successfully follow as far as it took you. And we're going to talk today about there's actually another huge thing that always was left out of all the BRRRR discussions that I saw, which is what happens after you buy it. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. But the folks who maybe did it a few times successfully, and yeah, sure, the property was cash flowing because they had a 3% loan on it. And then they had one or two that they were still in that period before they could refinance it, and interest rates doubled or tripled. Like, were they not able to refi the house? Because banks don't actually let you refi properties if the property can't cover the payment. Like, they're just going to say no to that. And even if they did, you know, I think that sometimes surprise of cash flow is not your rent minus your PITI payment probably caught some people aback. So there's probably some folks out there who either couldn't refi, are in the process of losing the property now, and so on. So today we're going to talk about the right way to do it in any market. We're going to stop using the fancy name. We're going to talk about the right way to go out and buy and renovate if necessary, and rent and refinance only if necessary in any market. Now, the first thing that we're going to do, though, is we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to invite listeners to call with questions at 877-772-9658, 877-772-9658.
Vina, if I could make a mention, Dave, you might want to switch those phones very quickly.
Well, the nice volunteers in there will be happy to answer people's real estate questions, right?
I don't think they're as knowledgeable as Ed.
And, or you can, actually, maybe for the next 10 minutes, you should send us an email at vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I may have to leave and go cry somewhere. I can't believe.
There's still one pledge sitting out there, I think. But I've not seen it yet.
So Ed, I don't think you were on when this happened, but they were in the middle of a challenge match where if they got a certain amount of money, then they got that they got more money from a corporation, and they were like $275 short, $275 short. And poor George is in here all by himself, and he's like sweating and flipping through the book and trying to find a premium that somebody will pick up the phone and call for. And I offered for one listener, if they would call and pledge $300 to get him over the top, that I would spend 2 hours with them helping them through the deal of their choice. First deal, creative deal, whatever deal. And I was like,
and nobody took that deal.
I know. I was like, you're done. You're fine. It'll don't worry. Next phone call, that'll be somebody taking me up on that, because, you know, like they get my phone number.
They're holding out. They want. They'll give $350 if they get Vina and Ed's phone number. Sorry, no, we won't do that.
Well, Ed knows. Like nobody has my phone number. Like that's just you know, not a thing. But no, nobody took it. Do you believe that?
Wow. Yeah, and it wouldn't be a big problem for me because everybody has my cell phone number. I just give it away. It's not a big deal. And the best part is most people call it.
Okay, everybody who calls and pledges $5 will give Ed's cell phone number. I'm kidding.
That's fine with me. I love talking real estate. I told you that before.
Well, I do too, but man, there's like endless numbers of people who want to talk real estate. Like I got other stuff I got to do, like real estate, for instance.
And I don't have a radio show, Vina, so that may be one of the problems.
Maybe.
A lot more listeners than I do.
that may be. Okay, so we're talking about Burr, which has been declared dead, except it's good news, folks. It's not. It never has been. It never actually was a thing except for, you know, in that hot market where, in that low interest rate market where it was literally hard to make a mistake buying a rental. You almost couldn't pay too much for a rental and it would still cash flow when your interest rate was 3%. But now, as Ed mentioned, interest rates are, if you're lucky as a real estate investor, they're 6.5%, you know, 7, 8 for a DSCR loan is not uncommon. And that changes the numbers, not so that you can't buy, but so that you have to actually work the numbers. You can't say, well, you know, this house will rent for $1,300 a month. I can be all in it for $130. Nope, that's not good math anymore. So let's talk about how you have typically done this strategy of buying houses, rehabbing them, renting them out, and then doing it again, Ed.
Well, first of all, Vina, you don't have long enough time for me to go through everything, so I'm just going to tell them they have to come on June 29th or to the national convention to get the full story.
Yeah, not fair. But, not fair.
Yeah, not, seriously. But the as far as how I go and evaluate a rental, there are 8 factors that affect my cash flow. And you talked about 2 of them, or 4 of them, which is principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. But it's the other 4 that people have a tendency to forget about, which you need to put in there when you're determining what your cash flow is. And that is maintenance, vacancy, management, and utilities. Now, for single-family homes, my utilities automatically go to 0 because I make sure my residents pay all of them up front. Mm-hmm. Management. I do my own management. And if you're deciding to do that, that's fantastic, but you should at least budget for it, because when you get up to 70, you actually have to hire people, and then that becomes a real factor that affects your cash flow. Then there are the 2 that everybody seems to forget about until they can't avoid them, and that is maintenance and vacancy. For me, when I'm managing myself, I actually take 15 to 20% of the rent and set it aside to cover those expenses, because if you're in this long enough, you are going to pay them. I mean, it took me almost 19 years, but I eventually ended up having to pay for a mainline sewer repair. I got lucky on that one. But then just general turnover, average turnover, depending on how rough they've been, is anywhere between $1,000 to $5,000. And, you know, you have to account for all that. Otherwise, you're going to have one really, really bad month at some point in the future when you have to pay all of that out of your pocket. Mm-hmm. And let's not forget about vacancy. At some point, they're going to go vacant. And if you have financing in place, the bank doesn't care that it's vacant. The bank still wants their payment, and you have to be able to pay it. So what I will do is I will figure out what my rent is in the area, and I will subtract taxes, insurance, maintenance, vacancy, management, and utilities from the rent every month. And then the next thing I'll subtract is my target cash flow. Now, when I was first starting out, my minimum cash flow was $200 just because it didn't seem like it was worth it to do it for any less than that. And whatever was left was what I could pay for financing. That still works for me to this day. And that's still what I'm using. I started out with that, and I'm still using it to this day. So that's pretty much the down and dirty, quick version. Well,
and let's walk listeners back through that, because I know there's some people taking notes, and they miss some of that. It's principal, interest, taxes, insurance. So just basically that would be your mortgage payment, right? That's you get a loan from the bank. It's probably going to include all of those things.
Yeah, if you go to the bank.
Mm-hmm. And then,
otherwise, you better escrow for them.
Right. If you've gotten a private loan or a seller-held loan where you have to pay them separately, you still pay them, but you just pay them by putting them in a bank account every month until the bill is due in 6 months or a year or whenever. And then there is maintenance, vacancy, management, and utilities. Now, let's go back to the maintenance thing. Because here's one of the most common things I hear from a newer investor who hasn't had years of looking at their own books and their own cash flow. They will say, well, I don't need to set aside anything for maintenance because it's newly rehabbed.
Okay. Sorry. Any house that has not just been, in fact, heck with this, any house. I don't care if it's newly rehabbed, newly built. At some point, something's going to go wrong. The older the house is, it's all the stuff hidden behind the walls that doesn't usually get touched during a rehab that's going to go bad. I said I avoided it for 19 years, but I know that a lot of the houses I buy here in Pittsburgh have terracotta or cast iron sewer lines leaving the house. It's a matter of time before one of them collapses on me, and I'm going to have to pay to fix it. You got windows that all of a sudden don't open. You've got, you know, electrical shorts that just happen to pop up. I don't know where they come from, but anyway. There's all kinds of things that go wrong with houses, even if they're newly rehabbed. Mine are mostly newly rehabbed before I put them in service the first time.
Let's say that the only reason that you get away with setting aside 15 to 20% for maintenance is because your house is newly rehabbed. If you try to rent a house that you're like, well, I'll throw a coat of paint on everything and then, you know, it'll be fine. Somebody will move in. Your maintenance expenses will go way above 15 or 20%.
Definitely. You'll
constantly be in there, you know, fixing this and fixing that. And it's not just the stuff you can't see. It's also that, people live in your house. And people living in it, like in my house. So my house was completely 100% rehabbed as of, when did we finish that? July of, 2022. I could walk around there now and find you $3,000 worth of stuff that needs to be fixed because we've been living there. and we've bumped the wall with furniture, and we've, you know, one of the hinges came off one of the cabinet doors. Like stuff happens when people live in houses, but that the invisible part is exactly what you mentioned. It's the stuff that really, some of this money that you are putting aside, not spending, it's called reserves, is going in the bank for when the thing that only goes bad every 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years goes bad. That way, the house is paying for it. Yeah, go ahead.
I'll say, if you don't put it aside, you end up becoming the slumlord that everybody complains about because you won't have the money to fix it when it does go bad.
Because and one hates to express one's superstitions about real estate, but have you ever noticed that when you own multiple properties, you have like a spate of roofs that need to be replaced and a spate of furnaces that go bad, like all within a couple of months? It's never neatly spaced the way you would like it to be.
Yeah, isn't it funny how furnaces always go bad in October, November?
Yes, as soon as somebody tries to turn them on. Yes. So I know I'm beating this maintenance factor to death, but when people fail, and I mean fail in the sense of they end up owning substandard properties, which was not their goal, or they end up like losing properties to foreclosure because, I mean, there's a cycle here, right? Roof leaks, can't afford to replace it, tenant moves, can't afford my mortgage payment, right? I mean, that's the cycle we see. It's usually because they spent the money that should have gone into reserves.
Exactly.
So,
and then I'm the one that ends up buying their house.
Yes. So can't state strongly enough, keep those reserves, keep them in the bank. They are not for buying another house with. That gets real tempting. With 70 properties, I'm guessing you have enough cash in reserves to buy a house or at least put a great big down payment in it. And it's real tempting to go, oh, but I've found this deal and I've got these reserves.
It is tempting, but then again, I'm a big fan of not having any money in my properties and 100% financing, but that's an entirely different story on how I do that.
Mm-hmm. Which we are going to talk about that, folks. Don't worry. You'll be like, oh, he should. I know. Tell me more. Okay. So maintenance vacancy management, which you said, even though you manage it yourself, you still put the money into the cash flow evaluation as if you didn't. Which is a great idea because even folks who are going to self-manage at some point, whether it's because they got a lot of properties or it's because they became financially independent and decided they were going to travel the world, the house is eventually going to need to afford a property manager. And then not forgetting utilities, particularly if you're buying like two families, three families, things like that, where some of the utilities are probably going to fall back on the owner. So
correct.
That's a chunk of what I don't know seemed to be missing from the few they would kind of mention these things, but it all just came down to no. The process is buy it according to 1% rule, rehab it, rent it, refinance it. And the reason for that order is the idea was always refinance it with a bank or a DSCR lender. And banks and DSCR lenders usually want to see some, quote, seasoning, i.e. you've had a tenant in it. And with Fannie Mae, that's a year that they want to see the tenant in it to do a cash out refi. And then you take out the initial loan you got, which was a hard money loan. I got a loan to both buy and fix the property with a new low fixed rate loan. Now, you just said, I try to avoid the refinance stage. How?
Yes. Well, first of all, one of the problems with BRRRR is they encourage people to ignore math. I do the math up front, and I know how much I can afford with regards to my payment for principal and interest, because those are the two variables that come into play with financing. If you know what that number is, you'll know whether a property will cash flow, assuming you know what the rent is, right off the bat. So when I go to, and again, I'm being in this for 20 years, I've learned a number of other strategies for financing a property that don't involve banks. Again, another story, but I've basically just bought the property first with the financing in place already. Okay. Now, some of the, like, for example, when I first went full time, I became unemployed to banks, so I couldn't get bank loans to begin with. And I learned that there are a number of people at my local real estate investors association who have retirement funds they're looking to loan. I figured out what number worked. I went to them, proposed it to them. And because I was buying it at the right price, they would give me the money to buy the property right up front. And I knew I was making money the second I bought the property. I didn't have to worry about refinancing on the back end.
Mm-hmm. So you were getting private money. You were getting a private money in an amount enough to both purchase and do the rehab.
That's correct. Yes.
But now it's important. I'm always thinking about new investors who are listening to us and going, "That's genius! I'm totally going to do that." The thing that you said that I hope they heard was you were buying the property at a good price. If it was, if you needed $100,000 to buy and rehab the property, and you were going to a private investor and saying, "Hey, give me $100,000 to buy and rehab this house," that house was probably worth what, 130, 140, 150 fixed up?
If not more, yes.
So that from the private investor's perspective, yes, it's getting a no money down deal, but if I have to take it back, it's worth a whole lot more than I put in it. That's the thought from the private lender side.
Yeah, in fact, I joke around with people because I'm also now a private lender in the other direction. My IRA has money in it and I loan it out for people who are buying the house. And I jokingly look at them and tell them, "I dare you not to pay me because I want your house. The house is worth enough to me that when I loan on it, I'll be more than happy to take it back because it's worth way more than what I'm putting into it." Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's the key there is you buy the property right. And that you just have to understand what motivates people to sell properties for less than what they're actually worth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Would you like me to go into that?
Well, we need to take a break, and when we come back, we do have some listener questions, and of course, I have a whole bunch of other questions as well. Listeners, you can give us a call with your questions at 877-772-9658, or you can send them via email to vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Talking today to Ed Benz about the Burr method, the bad news and the good news. The bad news is it is now very possible to make a mistake and not even realize that you've made one until after you've owned your rental property for a year and looked at the real numbers that Ed just went over, and then you're going, "Oh my gosh, I paid full price for this house, and also it can't make any money, and what do I do now? I can't sell it. Like, I can't keep it." It's, yeah, so we don't want anybody to do that. Also, I would be remiss if I did not mention that if you are a new rental property owner or an aspiring rental property owner, particularly if you're interested in smaller rentals, like single families, two families, things like that, on June the 29th, Cincinnati RIA is hosting an all-day online, you heard me say online, right? You don't have to come to Cincinnati for it, event called the Fundamentals of Rentals. Ed is one of the speakers. He's going to dive deeply into some of the ways that he evaluates and finances properties, along with Dave Corsi, who's been a guest on this show in the past. And then the afternoon is going to be spent on that important part that everybody gets so excited about finding the deal that they don't realize that both your stress level and your profitability is really dependent on what happens in all the years after you buy it. Do you have the right systems in place? Do you have the right policies in place? Are you screening folks correctly? Are you putting in people who actually have a good chance at succeeding in your rental agreement? And that's going to be the entire afternoon. There's a little fee for that. It's $47 for RIA members. It's $97 for non-members, although it would be easier just to, you know, go to CincinnatiRIA.com, join for a month for $25, and then you get $50 off. If you can't do that math, maybe real estate isn't the right thing for you. CincinnatiRIA.com. Just go to the calendar, click on June 29th, and get signed up for that. And yes, if you can't come, oh my gosh, there's graduations, there's weddings, there's vacation. I know, it's summertime. It will be recorded, and if you register, you will get the recordings. So again, that's CincinnatiRIA.com. Ed, I have a very immediate and relevant question here in my email from Jose.
Okay.
When I finance my rentals with private lenders, they all want to be paid back in 1 to 2 years. How is Ed not refinancing if he's using private lenders to buy his rentals?
You have the wrong private lenders. The private lenders that I'm using are all people, well, above 40, who are nowhere close to retirement, who want to get a consistent return, and are not real estate investors. And yes, I find those people at my RIA because there's a lot of new people there who have retirement funds and love to lend them out just because they're getting a return and they don't have to do the work themselves.
Well, and
I set the terms.
And a lot of them have been, although they would be interested in buying a rental themselves, they've been warned off of buying it in their retirement plan. Like that's a thing that,
oh, yes,
that lots of people, CPA, there are a lot of CPAs that recommend against it. There's even some real estate experts who recommend against owning rentals in your IRA, but they're perfectly happy to loan money for rentals from their IRA. It has to do with liability, but it also has to do with by not paying taxes because you own it in your IRA, you also waste the tax breaks by owning it in your IRA, right?
Yes, I've heard all of those answers before, and it's all a matter of personal preference. Me, I personally prefer to loan out of my IRA because it's the simplest way to get a really decent return, which is why my IRA is primarily just loaned out to different investors.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and there's that whole thing about at what point are you, quote, providing services? There's some nervousness about, okay, if I own a rental in my IRA and I go over there to show it to a tenant, have I just provided a personal service to my IRA? And if the IRS ever finds out, they're going to blow up my IRA and only give me back 60% of it. So there's a lot of reasons that people make loans out of an IRA or 401k, but own real estate in their LLC. They own it outside of that. So,
yes.
While I was reading Jose's question, a question from Pete popped up, and Pete's question is, the private lenders that I know all are charging 12% interest. Even if I could get that for 20 years, I'm not sure how I would make cash flow paying 12% interest.
Vina, this is a funny story, but when I went full time in 2013, I was sort of forced into it by my boss. It was nice enough to force me into full time investing, and I had no choice but to take those 10 to 12% loans and make them work because, according to the banks, I was unemployed. That's what led me down the road to figure out the math on it first and figure out how to buy it. If you buy them right, a 10 to 12% loan, you know, I think it was, for me, it was 5 years for every $20,000 I borrowed. So just figure out where I was buying my houses at.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I chuckle a little bit today to find out people are telling me you can't buy houses that cheap anymore. And I'm turning around and doing it every day. I just bought a 3-bedroom, 1.5-bath in a B+ neighborhood for $70,000.
Mm-hmm.
It is possible to buy them out there. You just have to buy them at the right price and finance at the right price. And a 10 to 12% loan, I'll keep that and not have to take it out because I'll be cash flowing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I get the opportunity to refinance, I sure will,
mm-hmm.
but I've made it work at 10 to 12% every day.
Go,
I'll just tell you to take the challenge and figure out how to do it.
Go back to 5 years for every $20,000 I borrow. What do you mean by that?
When I was in it in 2013, my goal was to get the paid off rentals.
Mm-hmm.
So if I was trying to pay them off in 5 years, I could borrow about $20,000 and still have a decent cash flowing property. And back when I started in 2013, we were just coming out of the, the big crash of 2008, 2009. And there were properties around me that I could buy, my lowest one I bought was $9,000 ready to go. And it was just in a C neighborhood, in a rental neighborhood, and I wasn't afraid to take it on. The people wanted out. They were motivated. I bought it for $9,000, paid it off in 5 years. So I was able to put together, and I was just trying to get them paid off quickly because I fully paid off rental is the best cash flowing thing I've ever come across.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to worry about payments. So it was just, I figured out that somewhere around $20,000, I could get it paid off in 5 years and still cash flow with that one, you know, 150 to two. It was, back then it was 150. It moved up to 200 when I got a little better. And now I just work around the numbers until mm-hmm. it works for me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Good to know that you're a pay them off guy, because one of the things that I'm always telling people to ask when they're talking to somebody, because they know that they've got a lot of experience like you and they're getting advice, they should understand the background of why the person is doing it the way they're doing it. And for some folks, it's all about current cash flow. It's all about, I want to make the lowest payments I can for the longest time I can, because it's all about how much cash flow am I getting today. And for other people, it's like, you know what? I don't mind if I don't make any cash flow for 7 years if at the end of 7 years I have a paid off property.
And yep, and that's
either thing's good. You know, like I'm not gonna argue with anybody's, like, what makes them feel good. So, and I could argue both sides of that, but so you are a pay 'em off guy.
Yes, I'm a pay 'em off guy. All I had to do was at the end of my first fiscal year, where I had put a whole bunch of them into play, was start looking at that one expense account called interest. And just figuring if I wasn't paying that, what I could be doing with that. And that's what motivated me to just pay everything off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, we have gone through the questions at vinaradio@gmail.com for the moment. So let's talk about, so you're still just on this same path, like market's way different, but you're still out looking for something that you can buy that will cash flow a certain amount after all of your principal, interest, taxes, insurance, maintenance, vacancy, management, and utilities expenses. I know that you have heard that somebody just handed me 2 hours of my time for a $300 pledge to the station. Well, first thing I want to do was look at it and make sure it wasn't a crazy person. And it's not.
Good.
it's Sherry. I like Sherry.
They're crazy about the show.
But the thing is, can we still count that toward the...
As station director, I will allow it to be retroactive to when you made the offer.
Well, good. And what was the matching grant? What was the old?
It was we were raising money toward the Culver's grant. So,
which was it a 2-for-1?
It was 400, and we were 275 away at the time.
Okay, so Sherry, you just raised $700 for the station with your $300 pledge. Thank
yes.
you.
Tremendous. Thank you.
Yes, and I her number's on there. I'll have to take that home so I can give.
We'll
her,
make a copy for you.
Give her a call and whatnot. Deals don't pencil out, Ed. That's the thing that I know all of your members are showing up and going, I don't know how to buy any rules. Like, none of them pencil out because, you know, they're looking at MLS. They're running the same numbers you are. They're saying, oh my gosh, at these prices, it not only can't cash flow, it's negative by a couple of $100 a month. So what's the secret there? Like, what do we do when deals don't pencil out?
Find ones that do, and I'm sorry to be so blunt about it, but going on the MLS, okay, so let me back up by saying this. There's typically one of four motivating factors involved with anybody who sells their house for less than what it's actually worth, and most of those people don't show up on the MLS. You have to actually go out and actively look for them and find them.
Mm-hmm.
The four motivating factors are what I call the four D's: death, divorce, disability, and then dumb, and you fill in the last three letters. Death, somebody's died in the family, the income's gone away. Disability, they got hurt and the income went away. Divorce, well, that's sort of self-explanatory. And then the all-encompassing dump is drug addiction, gambling addiction, any of the other things that cause people to make bad decisions financially and put their house at risk. When you find one of those four people, they're typically just emotionally done with the house. They just want to walk away and be left alone, no longer have to worry about this weight that's around their ankle. And if you can solve their problem, you can purchase their house at a significant discount and have it pencil all day. Mm-hmm. That $70,000 house I told you about was actually a $175,000 ARV house that I solved the executor with five siblings' problem. Mm-hmm. I made the house go away. Mm-hmm. Now she's done with her siblings. She no longer has to deal with the estate, and she's happy. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy. Mm-hmm. So it's just a matter of finding the proper deal.
Yeah, well, Ed, I'll say I've kind of gone the opposite direction of that and have bought most of my rentals at pretty close to full value, like full current market value over the past 4 or 5 years. I've just done it by taking over other people's 2% and 3% loans.
Well, that's one of the many ways of financing that I've talked about that I didn't know how far we wanted to go into. Sure, there's a whole bunch of 2%, 3%, 4% loans out there, and that typically happens with the people who are in foreclosure. You just need to get in front of them to propose it. Mm-hmm. And most of them are happy to do it because they've only bought within the past, 3 to 4 years, haven't really paid down very much principal. And then they go and talk to a real estate agent and tells them they need to do $10,000 in repair, and oh, let's add 7% for the commission on top of it. And now what they're advertising on the MLS is more than what the property is worth. Mm-hmm. Provide them a solution, and the financing is already in place.
Yes, Ed, unfortunately, we are out of time. I do want to encourage all listeners who are in the early stages of their rental lives or are just thinking about it, get to this June 29th online event. Like nothing like this exists. There's not a place where you can go and spend $47 and get a whole day with three experts, nothing being sold. You know, there's no courses at the end of this, nothing like that. Just giving you advice on how to work the rental market right now. Unfortunately, if you go to YouTube for that advice and you're looking at a video that's older than, 2 years old, it's probably good advice when they made the video, but it's not relevant anymore. CincinnatiRIA.com. Go to the June 29th on the calendar. Look for the Fundamentals of Rentals class, which Ed is co-teaching. And also, come see Ed at the 2024 National Real Estate Investing Conference, where he will be spending 90 minutes talking about how to do BRRRR without me interrupting him every 5 seconds. We'll give you more information about that as the year progresses here on Real Life Real Estate Investing. Ed, thank you for your time. Appreciate
it. Anytime, Vina. Anytime.
Listeners, we'll be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.